Buzz! 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 Buzz!
Welcome back to a post-March Madness at the Buzzer. Of course, at the Buzzer is Ralph Report's podcast. For all of your Colorado Athletics news and notes, when we feel like it, some other teams' news and notes from around the country. We are finally done with our March Madness bender, and after watching a bunch of games, CU and non-CU, we picked up the mics once again and are riding into the offseason, the long, cold offseason, only spared by spring football. So we'll talk about the autopsy of the 2022 season for the Buffs, basketball Buffs, and get a little bit of spring football news and notes in there at the end. But today is still mainly about Boyle's boys. I'm one of the co-hosts, Jack. As you know, over there is another co-host, Sam. Welcome back, Sam.
Thank you. Where have you been?
Like I said, I just watching as much basketball as possible. This was a nice return to normalcy for March Madness, and it was a unbelievable tournament. I thought it was one of the best I can remember.
I was mostly watching the beginning of the tournament because that's when I could actually watch games before 2 a.m. I wish that there was more close games in that tournament. I know there's a lot, but I thought I could have used the buzzer beater.
There's a fun game I play every year where there's a main bracket pool and there's a bonus pool, and depending on the teams that you get in your main pool, you get the same as in your bonus pool, but the only way you move forward in your bonus pool is if you cover. So if your team covers but loses, you move forward. This year is kind of boring because it like happened once where someone lost but also covered. It felt like it was either a complete upset, like you completely won the game. Like St. Peter's games were not super – the Kentucky one was the closest one. They weren't really like barn burner buzzer beaters. Or you're the favorite and you won outright, like Kansas, who didn't have a first-half deficit until the final. So it was – I thought a really fun tournament and a lot of upsets happened. But, yeah, there weren't a lot of like moments, like highlights, I guess, to look at.
Yeah, I mean – I think it's bad that the first buzzer beater I think of is Jordan Poole versus Houston, but
yeah, what?
I don't know why that's the first one I thought of
in March Madness history.
That's the first one I thought of. Okay, RJ Hunter would be the second one.
Wow. Okay, that makes more sense. I always go to Chris Jenkins because I will never forget that. Okay. Shot.
Yeah. And then third, I think is Scotty Reynolds putting Villanova over Pitt to get to the Final Four.
Oh wow, that's going way back.
DeJuan Blair's Pitt.
I do also remember the Jordan Crawford, Jacob Pullen duel, Kansas, K-State, Xavier, where they both just had the baggiest shorts imaginable.
Jacob Pullen is fucking okay. What are we talking about today?
That was March Madness. March Madness. That was the NCAA tournament. Our Buffs were playing in the National Invitational Tournament.
Which the better was tournament, I say.
More historic, absolutely, of course. And more Pac-12 participation, arguably. But they drew the St. Bonaventure Bonnies in the first round, and they got to host. They were a 4 seed, got to host the 5 seed. We both thought the 4 seed was a little underseeded, maybe exactly right. I don't know. But in the end, we haven't recorded since then, of course, but in the end, St. Bonaventure just came in and acted like the senior-laden team they were and defeated – see you in Boulder on route to quite a long NIT run.
Yeah, it turns out the one player that I had heard of on the team, Osun Osunmiwi, is actually quite good and dominated the paint.
Yeah, he was a scary big. He like took Batty's lunch money for a long part of that game.
Yeah, they're good. Like we talked about it before, they had a lot of hype heading into the season. They were preseason top 25. They were supposed to be like the mid-major power that just did so well. And then they struggled a bit. And we saw exactly why they had that hype, and they ended up making it to the Final Four of the NIT. So it's not that bad of a loss. I don't think any loss in the NIT is going to be that bad. It's a one-off. It sucks we lost at home.
Yeah, and it's a shame. I mean, you want to give them deep postseason run. You want to get more postseason experience, especially for such a young team. And you obviously want to make sure Evan Barry doesn't go out like that. But, like, I don't know, St. Bonaventure, I was just so impressed. I honestly just really liked the way that their team played. It was super – I mean, on offense, their whole offense was just like, we have bucket getters, go make tough shots, and it worked for the most part. Like, they were hitting crazy floaters. The two guards that are, like, eighth-year seniors were just coming in no fear, just hitting ridiculous layups. And then on defense, we talked about this while we were watching live, but I was just so impressed with how fast their rotations were. There were no open threes for CU to take because they were getting to the corners or the kickouts so quick. And that's just really good. That's what CU was when they had McKinley, you know, McKinley's last year, two years ago. It was the same thing of like, it's really hard to beat good coordinated team defense. And that's what we saw. There was no easy buckets, no open lanes, no open shots. It was tough, especially down the stretch. I will just outright say, I think CU faltered down the stretch. There was some turnovers and fouls that shouldn't have happened. And I think that's what you see when you have a super young team playing a super old team sometimes. So it sucks and it's disappointing. And obviously it was an upset. I think CU was like 2 or 3 point favorites, but I can't be mad. It wasn't like it was like the ref stole it or St. Bonaventure was – it wasn't anything insane. It was just they were playing really solid, solid defense, and they trusted their seniors to make plays.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to even be a homer, I don't think there's anything you can say like that. I mean, no. Damn, sometimes you get outplayed. Tough. But that's okay.
Tough way for CU season to end. So – we saw, like you said, St. Bonaventure sprinted through the NIT bracket, beat one seed Oklahoma, and then beat, I think, the two seed to get to the Final Four. We saw Washington State also make the Final Four from the Pac-12, which is good to see. I really still like that Kyle Smith team. Mm-hmm. And blah, blah, blah. We don't care too much about the NIT. I think Xavier won on a pretty crazy last-second shot.
So Xavier fired their coach mid-tournament. What happened?
No, they fired the coach directly after the NIT, like 2 weeks ago or like last week, and hired Sean Miller back. Yes, our old friend. That's the
bomb you were waiting to drop on me.
Yes, okay. Our old friend back at Xavier, back where he started.
Why don't you fire? Was he bad? Steele?
He was the worst coach in 30 years, probably, but that's because they.
Oh, okay.
It was, I think, back to back. What was it? It was Thad Matta into Sean Miller into Chris Mack.
Into that's really good.
Travis Steele.
Oh, shit.
And it's okay. Like, yeah, you know, hard to tough meet those expectations. So it was, it was unfortunate end for CU. We're now in the. We're now into the hoops offseason thing. And we all know Tab Oro for the last 12 years has started every offseason the same way. He has one-on-one meetings with his players to talk about their future with the team, see what he envisions their role as, and then he leaves it up to them if they want to stay or go. This has always been a thing. You always see the transfers come out around this time or the departures come out around this time. Let's start with the obvious. Similar to last year, he is not allowing the COVID year to affect his seniors' eligibility. So even though, I mean, Evan Batty is going to pursue professional opportunities, which he absolutely should. He has given everything to the school and more. So go ahead, get your money. Eli Parquet, the other scholarship senior, has entered the portal as a grad transfer. No bad blood there. Same thing as Deshaun Schwartz leaving and Oswald leaving last year. Just something that Tab World's not interested in.
So for one is I'm glad Evan Batty is going pro because I cannot see him wearing another uniform.
Right, absolutely.
Break my heart.
Yep.
But on Eli Parquet, I mean, yeah, he's following the exact same route as Deshaun and Dallas Walton, and he's going to be an impact transfer wherever he goes.
Honestly, go to George Mason.
No. I think he can do better than that. He like Deshaun was good for them because they needed a veteran scorer and someone. But Parquet, he had a bad season this year. But going to somewhere where he can just be that role player or an energy guy off the bench for a really good team, I think he could fit in. Maybe not Texas Tech because they're probably too good, but something in that vein, I can see him going. Like I would just like to see him go where they just have a crazy defensive culture.
Yeah, I certainly wish him nothing but the best. It's a shame he got hurt this year. He would have won Defensive Player of the Year, I think, if we had him all year. But yeah, I mean, nothing wrong there. And CU just is ready. They play it by the book. They want to get these young people more and more playing time.
I'm gonna miss him because I remember his first year, his first 2 years. It just looked like we had just kind of someone who was an athlete and he had some flashes, but you didn't really know what he would be. And we didn't know if he would develop into that player at CU. And then he started to get more playing time. He started to hit some shots and we started to think that he could really be something. And I'm just very happy that he became such a good player and he hit some crazy shots for us. I think he hit a 3-pointer to tie against Arizona at home.
Yep.
That was a huge shot. I think probably the biggest of his career. And I mean, he was the best perimeter defender in the Pac-12 2 years in a row. It's just a shame he got hurt. He was one of my favorite players to follow on this team.
Yeah, and he fit the Tad mold perfectly. So it's a shame to see it end in a an injury and then in a transfer out, but totally as planned. There were some, maybe not unexpected, but definitely unplanned departures as well this offseason that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
Let's start with the most impactful. Keyshawn Barthelemy is entering the transfer portal. Something that is, I don't know, it's going to be tough to replace a double-digit points per game Power 5 starter, and he's going to get plenty of interest in the transfer portal from other Power 5 teams. I really like what his role ended up being at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it was kind of on the wall that he was less enthused with not being the primary ball carrier. And I don't know. It's pretty obvious to see KJ Simpson's going to step up in the starting role. And Keyshawn is going to be the main obstacle in that. So I think it's a transfer we were all expecting. Partially expecting, yeah. Maybe.
I was surprised by it, but I think it is kind of a win-win for both player and team in that I think Keyshawn is too good to be that sixth man. And that's probably what he would profile as on this team. I think we saw it early, but he's not really a pure point guard. I think that's pretty obvious at this point. And
well, that's why I thought it was such a good at the end of the back half of this year when we went on the run. I thought that was such a good fit for him. To your point, he was just hunting shots, which is great. He's a really athletic guy. He can slash. He can shoot. I thought that was a really good fit, is just to have him run off ball, be secondary ball handler. You're Josh Fortune, if you will.
Did you have to do that?
I thought he fit that role, but I also think think it can do more for other teams, and I think he wants to do more than that.
Yeah, and it makes sense because I think Tad Boyle would prefer someone who really sets the tone as the point guard, and he might prefer to go bigger and more defensive with that instead of playing two small guards. I think we have to see what happens with the rest of the roster. Because I don't actually know who would start at the two guard next year besides maybe Nick Clifford, but I don't think it would be Nick. I'm not sure. But I think we can get into it later, but someone like, I don't want to say Javon Ruffin because we don't know anything about him, but that's I didn't mean that, but I'm saying like the type of player that fits more onto CU. I don't think it's a Barthelemy type in that role.
Yeah. So yeah. And like we mentioned, Keyshawn Barthelemy is going to get high Power 5 level interest. He's already heard from Oregon in conference. As well as Wazoo.
He's not going to get a bigger role there.
I don't think he's going to go to either of those, but he has a long list. Maryland is one that reached out, and I think that would be a really good fit because they're kind of rebuilding. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see him go to a pretty good team.
I think he has 3 years eligibility.
Left. Yes. Yep. He's going to be a third year sophomore, which is also valuable to some people. So we wish him well. And I understand why he's transferring. That also means the CU's in the market for a transfer guard. And that's what we're seeing with some of the recent offers. So I think that also helps answer your question about who's going to start at two guard might not be
on the roster.
He might not be on the roster right now. So they went for some big fish. There's a Belmont guard named Will something. I'm getting the last name. Give me a sec. Everyone's already on him. We're already out of his top five, but you know, the rest of the team is staying intact. Other than obviously the other huge potential Will departure. Richard. Yes. Thank you. Will Richard. But he's out of reach. The other obvious departure that we have not talked about, potential departure, likely departure, is of course Jabari Walker, something that we've expected all year. So he put his name into the NBA draft with the ability to withdraw. I do not expect him to withdraw at all, but he's officially testing the waters.
Yeah. Do you have thoughts on this before I say mine?
I don't think his value is going to get higher by coming back. I think he proved everything he needs to from the college level. I thought he ended the year really well, especially shooting really well. And, you know, he's younger than Chet Holmgren. So capitalize on that while you can.
Yeah. I didn't realize how young he was until we were talking about it last week.
Yep.
His player type in the NBA is kind of tricky. He's 6'8". He's not that strong. He's not that heavy. He's not that athletic. And he doesn't really have any elite skills that profile at the NBA level. So it's kind of hard. He profiles something as a tweener. And he has no real set role in it, except for being an energy guy. And he might not be athletic enough for being an energy guy. And I think that you have to talk yourself into that he works really hard and he has a lot of skills and he's developing so quickly that he will round out his game and become like a defensively capable stretch four. I think that's what you have to think about. And I think teams will talk themselves into him as an NBA prospect enough to draft him early second round. I think that's probably a good landing spot for him.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think you're right. I don't think he's going to be a first-round prospect, but I don't think he ever will be, partially because what you just mentioned. No. His athleticism is a hard stop on his ceiling. I think he's plenty athletic enough for the college game, but it's totally different in the pros. He's obviously a really good natural rebounder. I think we saw
Tyler Bay. We saw Obi Toppin in person.
Yeah.
Those guys are NBA athletes.
Yep.
It pops when you see it.
Yeah.
And I also think with Jabari, his shooting, like he shot over 50% on threes last year. And then he started the year really slowly. But then as Pac-12 play started, he started hitting more and more threes. And I think he was around. I'll pull up his.
I mean, his stroke is so pure is the thing. Like you can look at the percentages. Absolutely. But the main thing is just his mechanics are so smooth. And he's taken a lot of people like in your face threes. Like he had people in his face, which is going to be a thing in the NBA level. He wasn't taking wide open shots only.
37% on threes, 82% on free throws. His shot looks good. He can pull up and take contested shots, like you said. That's all really projectable as a shooter. And if that was something he needed to prove, it would be a reason for him to come back. But it looks like he's proven that part of his game. And I don't know what he would have to, what he could come back and work on.
Right. That's the thing, is if he comes back, why? Like, he's already first team all Pac-12. He led the team in rebounding, or led the conference in rebounding. If he came back,
15 and 10 in conference play. That's really fucking good.
Right.
I don't think any CU player has had that. Not Tyler Scott's Bay, not Josh closest. Scott.
Scott's going to be your
closest. Yeah. David Harrison didn't even do that.
He was borderline dominant for a lot of the back half of this year, or just straight dominant for the back half of this year. So I don't know what he would gain by coming back. The only reason I would see that is if he just straight up hears, we're not going to draft you this year. If for some reason that feedback is you're not draftable this year, work on ball handling or something, you know, make sure you can take people off the dribble. But he already has shown that, and his passing was on display at the end of this year as well. He did a lot of good passing things. So I don't expect him back at all. I don't expect him back, which is totally fine. Go get your money. That's also good for CU.
I want him back. I'm hoping sometimes in the draft process, there are players who get to the scrimmages and they realize that they're not really cut out for it and that they're just going to try again the next year. And that sucks when it happens.
Yeah.
And I want that to happen. I want him to come back. That's the opposite of what happened with Derek White. And it actually could happen with Jabari Walker too, is that he starts to play against these guys and shows more skill than they thought he had.
Is a good transition. If he doesn't come back next year, it will absolutely be, I don't want to say another semi-rebuilding year, but you have to tamp down your expectations 100%. The roster next year, if he doesn't come back, I would expect CU to look at a forward transfer. They already are putting feelers out for some of those.
Can we talk about too that Jabari Walker had?
All right, sorry, little hiccup, but you were talking about Jabari Walker.
No, I mean he went from being a 2-3-star prospect with no Division I offers to being a sophomore, probably leaving for the NBA.
Yeah.
What does that do for CU? What does that do for what does that say about the talent evaluation on the team? Because we keep seeing them unearth these gems.
At a rate better than almost anyone in the country, definitely better than anyone else in the conference. Like it's really consistent with Tad Boyle, which is the hard part. Because if you look at football, they're trying to say, either intentionally or unintentionally, trying the same strategy. But Tad Boyle is like doing it consistently and has for his entire career at CU. And I think not for nothing, it's also great to see that Samaki Walker, who's top five pick, and Jabari Walker's father, also in NBA circles, obviously, really likes CU. He really likes what CU's done for Jabari, and so does Jabari. I think they both came away really happy with the, like a million other CU players, like they love their time at CU, and that's not for nothing, especially when they leave early. It's not like a leave early because they didn't want to go back. It's a leave early because you go get your money.
We see with all these CU players in the NBA too, is that they all are very proud of CU and they all represent CU. I think the only one who I haven't really seen do that much is Alec Burks, but the other guys definitely.
Coach got fired.
Yeah, I know. But I don't know where I'm going with this, but.
Well, it just speaks more. The more you can establish the baseline of, if you come to Colorado, we will absolutely develop you no matter what level you're at, and you will get a chance to play professionally, whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. So keeping to establish that baseline, Jabari is kind of a different he's kind of follows the Tyler Bay mold. If you remember, Tyler Bay also only had one other Power 5 offer that was committable by the end of his recruitment. Mm-hmm. And, also worked his way up into getting drafted early. But they were both, I don't know, it's a different vibe than kind of the George King route went, or the Derek White route went. So just being able to show more versatility in how you can develop these kids and how you are getting people to the league will obviously help you in recruiting and add more cred, especially when there's someone like Jabari, who played at Compass Prep in Arizona, who's a pretty big prep program, prep basketball program for his last year, and obviously has NBA connections with Samaki. So I don't know. It's good for CU either way. If he comes back, it's way more in your face about how good it is. But we also obviously want Jabari Walker to make as much money as possible playing basketball.
Yeah. All right. So, do we have any? Who do we know is coming back? Who are our given starters?
Everyone else is in, according to Ted Boyle. Yes. So you got KJ Simpson coming back, assuming he's going to take the starting role. He did not start a single game last year, from what I remember, because he liked being off the bench. I expect that to change when it becomes his team next year. Hammond, Julian Hammond, also back. We have Javon Ruffin back from injury, a redshirt year, coming in as a freshman. Quincy Allen, a redshirt year, coming in as a freshman. Allen will definitely play a lot next year and will be very important to how the offense operates. Nick Clifford coming back. I would expect him to start in some capacity. Tristan DeSilva coming back. He's going to start. Lawson Lovering is your obvious center, but he has a lot of work to do coming back from injury and also just developing, so we'll see how that goes.
You'd ideally kind of want them to find the starter at that position in the transfer market.
You definitely want an experienced big, and I think some of the offers they're putting out speak to that. There's an interesting one out there. They're looking at a two-time D2 All-American, Patrick Cottier from UW-Milwaukee, who was who went 22-8 2 years in a row. Someone like that would be a really good fit. He knows how to get his buckets, he knows how to play basketball, and you don't really have to coach him too hard. But we'll see. That would be a potential incoming transfer. And then coming in, you have true freshman Joe Hurlbert coming in from North Dakota.
We forgot Luke O'Brien. Shout out Luke O'Brien.
That's right. He will play more minutes than either of us expect, just like this year. So Joe Hurlbert's going to come in, 6'10 guy, semi-ready, but huge jump, obviously, from North Dakota basketball to Pac-12 basketball. And then the other
It's been done.
That's right. Austin Dufault. And Joe Hurlbert's no slouch. He had some pretty big offers. And then the other freshman coming in is RJ Smith, fresh off of a state championship run from Damien High School in California, Southern California. If that story sounds somewhat familiar, KJ Simpson did the same exact thing last year, not at the same high school, but went to the state championship for his team, led his team in scoring. RJ Smith did the same exact thing. So you expect him to come in a little bit more ready to go. He's going to be another stupid under the radar win for Tad. I'm not a huge fan of his game, but I know that's because he's a different guard than what I like. He's just long, knows how to get his buckets, and plays boring defense. So,
what's Tad boring defense?
If you look at his stats, he's not like getting 8 million steals a game, but from some of the scouting reports you've seen out there from 247. Wow. Deleon Brown. That's a name. I wonder how he went at Grand Rapids. Wow. I love Deleon Brown.
I don't think it went well for him.
No. But RJ Smith he's going to be the annoying on-ball defender that you like. And he was under-recruited partially because he was behind 2 5 stars in his first 3 years at Damien High School. This year, he was the undisputed leader, shot the ball pretty well, I think averaged 20 in the playoffs, something around there, and led his team. He's a winner. One of those annoying guys where you're just like, yeah, he's a winner. He'll come in and provide leadership and grit and actually be good. I don't know.
All right, so I have a question about the roster construction. How many scholarships do we have available? Because Mason Faulkner was on the team, then transferred to Louisville.
Yes, so his scholarship was used. We could not use that in recruitment last year, so it just freed up. So there's three expected scholarships.
Who'd they use? Did they use it on Will Laughlin?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Good for him.
Yep.
Okay, so there's three open scholarships. Because we have two without Barthelme. Coming in.
Without Barthelme. So it was Batty, yes. Parquet, Laughlin.
What? Batty, Parquet, Laughlin.
Those are the three scholarships that are automatically available at the end of this year.
Parquet, Laughlin. Okay.
Then you have Barthelme added and potentially Jabari.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And we have two players filling it already. So that leaves us three open scholarships if Jabari.
Potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, is Barthelme for sure gone?
Bartholomew's for sure gone. I'm just treating Jabari as potential until he says I'm out.
Yeah. And it looks like he's leaving room to come back if it goes that way.
So potential targets there. We've already talked about Bobby Clinton, who has been linked to CU for a while now. He was a Bobby Clinton from Sweden, I think, or Norway.
Bobby Clinton. He's actually from very close by to me.
So he was committed to...
He's from Malmo, which is an hour away from...
Oh, wow. You can go scout him.
No, because he lives in the U.S., I think. But yes.
So he was committed to Maryland under Mark Turgeon. When Maryland fired Mark Turgeon, they released Clinton, or Clinton got released from his commitment. We have heard reports of Mark Turgeon coming around CU a few times. We know that he and Boyle are very close. They were at, together at, or I believe, Oregon and Wichita State for a while. And Boyle was under Turgeon at one of those stops. So they've been friends for a long time. It makes sense that CU would go after Clinton, and hopefully Turgeon's putting a good word in for CU. That is a target for one of those, or at least was a potential target for one of those scholarships. And now we're seeing CU look at a lot of the transfer options that just became clear now at the end of the tournament. So we've seen, there's some interesting Twitter follows, not that that means anything, but Rick Ray is following a few guys that are transferring out of Kentucky, Keon Brooks being one of them, which would be like a pipe dream of mine. Won't happen, but that would be like, oh, unbelievable.
I don't even know Keon Brooks' game. I just know the name.
He takes a lot of shots he shouldn't take. But,
oh, okay. So I'm out.
There you go. But he's super athletic, and I don't know. So anyways, we're seeing them go look at a lot of the transfers available. And this is now transfer season. So a lot of the LSU literally had their entire transfer team transfer out. So all 11 remaining scholarship players enter the transfer portal. We're going to see a lot of that this year, and a lot of that right now. So expect CU to get more active in offering transfers, offering immediate impact players as more become available.
Is it, are we already done with coach firing season?
A lot of it came and went. It would be, I don't know. It would have to be a tournament team now that's looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
But
you don't think Bill Self might get fired at Kansas?
If the NCAA forces them to, that would be the only reason.
Because
why.
When he had Snoop Dogg coming out throwing money with
there's plenty of the investigation into Kansas has not finished yet. So much like LSU.
Oh, that's nice.
Much like LSU, when they actually finish that, they're like, oh, we have to clean house. It's going to be, it might be like that, maybe.
Oh, what's Billy Preston up to these days? I don't think anything good.
I don't know either.
I'm guessing he's in Puerto Rico. I love doing these podcasts and looking up shitty basketball players.
Preston.
He's in South Africa.
Sylvia D'Souza, I know, is on a different tournament team. I forgot which one.
Oh, shit. Me too. He was on a good one. I picked them for an upset.
Is it Chattanooga?
Yes, exactly, Chattanooga.
But yeah, I think to your point, we're mostly done with coach season because they're all pretty easy. Once Maryland hit the first domino down, hiring Kevin Willard from Seton Hall, almost everything else fell into place pretty quickly. Seton Hall then grabbed Shaheen Holloway of St. Peter's fame. Shaheen Holloway played at Seton Hall, so it's easy 1-2 punch. Go grab him, easy money. Butler fired their coach and hired Thad Mata. So that's easy money. Xavier fired Travis Steele, hired Sean Miller.
To retreads.
Bunch of retreads, yeah, in the Big East. And then elsewhere, LSU quickly hired Murray State's head coach. Florida quickly hired San Francisco's head coach. Some of the smaller spots are going to have to get filled.
Wait, but Utah hired
Chris Smith last year.
Yeah,
LSU hired Matt McMahon of Murray State.
Yeah, where'd the San Francisco coach go?
Florida hired Todd Golden from San Francisco.
Todd Golden. Is that his name? Todd yep. Golden?
Yep.
Oh, this guy looks like he's like 31.
He's 37, I think.
Oh, shit. Interesting.
So, in terms of the Pac-12, I don't think you're going to see any coaching changes this year. California came on kind of strong, so Mark Fox keeps his job for another year. Wayne Tinkle has golden handcuffs around Oregon State's athletic department.
What a job.
I know. He did. I know. Bobby Hurley, I think, canned a lot of his staff again and kept his job. Oh, the other
How
big job.
How is he keeping his job?
Partially because, yeah. Well, the other thing with Arizona State is they're also awaiting the results, I believe, of their football investigation or what that's going to look like. Mm-hmm. Because the AD was Herm Edwards' former agent, so he's not going to fire Herm Edwards, which means if you actually want to fire Herm Edwards, you have to fire the athletic director, which means the new athletic director might fire Bobby Hurley. They are a complete mess. So don't worry about Arizona State.
Thanks for talking. I was stalling, counting how many Oregon State lost in a row. 18 losses in a row to finish the year.
They had a few transfers out as well.
Oh, man.
So, and the last big job, I think, nationally was Louisville hiring former Kentucky assistant Kenny Payne, who also played for the Cardinals. Pretty good hire, I thought. Definitely a good hire for local recruiting. And I can't believe Chris Mack just, like, left because he was too tired. But, you know, good for him. And I think that's going to end the string of major teams changing their coach. I don't think there's going to be another one.
Mm-hmm. What is CU's appeal to transfers? Because I think the highest profile transfer we've gotten ever is
ever or under Ted Boyle.
Under Ted Boyle, who would be ever?
I don't know, but I just
oh,
I
can speak no idea.
Ted Boyle.
Ted Boyle.
I have two answers.
It's not Carlon, is it?
That'd be a good one. Yeah, he started for Utah. Josh Fortune started for Providence before he transferred. That's a Power Six school.
Yeah.
And then I think the last one, probably Jeremiah the highest. Warren. No. Probably the Mason highest profile is Namon Wright transferring from Missouri.
Oh, that is it. That is it. Definitely.
Top 75 yeah, recruit.
Yeah, that sucks. He got hurt.
So it's probably Namon Wright.
Yeah, it is Namon Wright. Do we have any strong appeal to prospects who would want to
come? Well, now with NIL, I have no idea where CU stands regarding like what they can offer NIL wise. Mm-hmm. But you know, you have a coach. If you are a guard, you know, there's a coach that will absolutely get you to the NBA. If you have the talent there, he has a ridiculous track record with getting his lead guards to professional NBA level, right? Like the last guy who started that hasn't played NBA minutes at the point guard position. Is who? Dom Collier, maybe? But starting is generous.
Yeah, I think that would
so
be
it. I think if you're a guard, you go there because Tab Oil can put you in the league.
Oh, McKinley Wright has – oh, he did play – McKinley Wright played yeah. 2 minutes this year, I think.
Yeah,
but he got
goddamn right he did.
We didn't talk about this, but he got hurt. He was doing really well in the G League and got – he picked up an injury and has been out.
He's going to stick around the G League for a while. He's going to be one of those guys that's like 27, gets a two-way contract and just blows and like kicks ass and then just signed on for the rest of the year.
Yeah, the Frank Mason route.
Yeah, Torrey Craig. So I think that's your thing. If you're a big, you just look at the gaping hole that will be the minutes left by Batty and Jabari Walker, and you just say, I will absolutely start on a Power 5 16 if I go here. Like, there is nothing stopping me from taking 35 minutes a game and taking as many shots as I want.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be in a good team. Like, that's another good thing is, like, you could be the missing piece to go to the tournament. There's so much talent.
So did we talk about potential forwards to come in and be instant starters?
Or was it just
the Swedish kid?
Bobby Clinton. Well, there's the there's nothing super concrete right now, so I don't want to talk about any.
You don't have to talk specifically, but.
So my personal favorite option is someone that we both know, Fardaz Imak from Utah Valley.
Oh, shit. That would be amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that he fits in with our culture.
Okay.
Not in, like, the way that he's just kind of a plodding big man who is very wide and scores on those little like...
Plus, like, everyone's
going to push shots.
But everyone's going to win.
He's slow. And when was the last time we had, like, a go-to scorer, big boy, who is also slow? Have we ever had one?
Count Josh Scott as slow.
Josh Scott is not in that. Josh Scott is too polished and too good.
Okay. Torrey Miller?
No. Torrey Miller was a rim runner who didn't really know what to do. I don't think we've had a player type like this.
And Shane Harris Tunks.
Okay. Yeah, it's Shane Harris Tunks. I don't think we've had a player like this. I think I would like to have him on the team. I think everybody wants to have him. Like, what? Iowa is linked to him. Texas is linked to him. We're not getting this guy.
No.
Kentucky, Arkansas.
I told you we're not getting. I said that. I said he's probably too high.
I will take credit because I've mentioned him now for the past 2 years.
You absolutely have.
So I want you to acknowledge that, and you already did. So thank you. Damn, this dude's good though.
Yep.
Do we want to move on to football? I'm running out of things to talk about. No. We missed a couple of things, okay?
Okay.
So, one, we both have to apologize to Remy Martin because he's an NCAA champion.
I never said anything bad about Remy Martin. That's not true. Don't come at me with your sins. But I always liked how Remy Martin played. I'll say that. I just didn't like how he overshadowed McKinley.
Yes, I didn't like how he overshadowed McKinley. I didn't like Arizona State basketball. Still don't and will never. And I would say that I always said he should be a sixth man, and he was a sixth man. So I was also right.
It's such a good role for him. Take as many shots as you want when you're coming off the bench. Yeah, beautiful.
Did you think that they would have a chance of winning the tournament, Kansas? Because we both hated that side of the bracket. We didn't trust any of those teams.
I picked Kansas to win in every bracket I made.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? How did you know that?
How did I know they were going to win? I didn't. I had two teams I loved coming into the tournament, Kentucky.
How'd that go?
Yep, exactly. And Kansas. So literally the diametric opposites of how to perform in the NCAA tournament. The reason I love Kansas are Ochai Agbaji, end of list. Mm-hmm. I just love Ochai Agbaji that much. I thought they had a really good team. I thought McCormick was fine. I didn't love how really any of them played. I just thought you could make a pretty deep run on the back of Agbaji and they had a lot of senior guards. Coleman Land's like 8 years senior, and he can slow you down if you want to. You can speed up and run with Remy if you want to. Christian Braun came on late, which is something I didn't really clock, but was definitely helpful. And, you know, Agbaji and McCormick are two really good building blocks. But so you just can't pick Gonzaga anymore.
No, you can't. I was really dying on the UCLA hype train. I was going to.
They got real close. Just Team of Destiny. They ran to the Team of Destiny, and Caleb Love went supernova if you watched that game.
Yeah. No, I did not watch that game.
He had 2 points okay. in the first half and 28 in the second half. So there you go.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, so the last point that I wanted to talk about was the CU women's team playing in their first NCAA tournament under J.R. Payne. And they also ran into something of a Team of Destiny. Number 10 seed Creighton, who ended up going to the Elite Eight. And Creighton, they were very good, as we saw in that game.
Yep.
They were crisp. They were very smart.
CU played them the closest out of anyone that played them.
They did it basically. They profiled as a team that would not make mistakes and they would hit threes. And CU needs to force turnovers to get any offense going. And they also can't really defend the three-point line. That, I don't know why, but that's just a huge weakness for them. And it did not help. Maya Hollingshead played pretty bad in her final game. Jalen Sherrod is a fucking star. She's so good.
Yep.
And she was great, but she did get hurt in the middle of the game. So that was tough. I think there's a lot to look forward to with that team, because even if Maya Hollingshead has been the best player, they return, I think, everybody else except for her.
There's been a lot of transfers out. A lot of them make total sense, just people that didn't play. We're talking, Peanut Tuitoele is transferring out.
What?
So that is actually a pretty big loss.
Shit. No, I didn't know that. What?
It literally just had like 5 minutes ago as we were recording.
Oh, damn. You on TweetDeck?
I'm not on TweetDeck, if that's what you're asking. But there is plenty of talent still there. Sherrod is going to be the absolute star of the team if she can stay healthy. I really like where a lot of the guard play is. I don't remember if Quay Miller was a senior this year or not.
She's not. I think she was a COVID sophomore.
Oh, wow. Okay. So,
yeah.
Or gotta keep her around. You hope you have enough talent to, in the front court. That's always been Jared Payne's issue. She cannot keep the front court stable. Hollingshead was a really good help to that, but she needs more.
Well, Quay Miller is really fucking good, but,
still needs more. Yeah.
Yeah. Still needs more. And then Kendall Weta looks very good. It's so fun having those two just running around, making shit happen.
Yeah, on D, she is absolutely insane.
I think there's reason to be hopeful with this team. They have some quality players. I do want to know more about who transferred, who's coming in. I think it's something to watch. Is Leslie Finau coming back, or is she done?
I can't remember.
Lasila Finau.
So coming in, you have Jada Wynn, who's a guard. You got a wing forward, Lizzie Holder, and then you have a Canadian center, Bree McLeod, coming in, as well as another forward, Allie Fitzgerald.
Damn, I don't know.
Pretty big recruiting class.
I have no idea who these people are, but I'm excited to learn.
Yeah, Bree McLeod's going to be I think she might play pretty quickly. She was a top 50 watch list player.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. She's probably gonna play pretty quick. Wow. Yeah. Jada Wynn is a 6'6" guard. That's insane. Maybe it's not that insane. I feel like that's gonna be super tall.
I think it is tall. It's just not that tall. It's like, I think that's like having a 6'6" guard. Or like a 6'7" guard. All right, let's go to football. This is stagnating.
Yep. So I'm just looking through whole class. Sorry. Yes, let's go to football. Spring football is happening. It's done. It's currently ongoing. Great news.
Oh, wait, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Spring football currently ongoing. Some of the biggest storylines, of course, JT Shrout still not cleared for full contact, but he's obviously around the team and working. So he hopes to be cleared. He's further along in his injury than we thought. Rehab than we thought. So he should be cleared maybe at the end of spring camp, definitely in the summer for contact, which is good news. Carl Durrell has also been making some pretty obvious compliments towards Brendan Lewis, saying that he looks like a different player. He looks way better. So, you know, it's always hard to parse spring optimism from what's real and what's not. But good to hear that Brendan Lewis is back and fully engaged. As we know, we are a pro Brendan Lewis podcast. Other little storylines. Tommy Brown is practicing all along the offensive line. He's probably going to be the most important transfer coming in.
And our biggest NIL superstar.
That's right. Shinesty's own. And there's currently only six wide receivers practicing on the team, which is super light. But that's obviously a team, the position group that was hit heavy with transfers after the parting of ways with Darren Chivarini. So you hopefully, and that number is going to grow as the freshmen come in. And you can still play okay with six. That's changed. They've mentioned how that's changed how they practice so far in some of their formations into something a little more tight end heavy, which is music to my ears. Similarly, on offense, there's only three scholarship running backs on the roster right now, including Jaylee Stacks. So Alex Fondeau is going to get a lot of work in the spring.
Sorry, I saw Pina Tuitele's, she posted, she tried to say Dear Buff Nation, but she accidentally typed Dead Buff Nation. Oh no, Pina.
Ouch.
Okay, I was not listening to anything you were saying. You said Alex Fontenot.
Just running through story.
Alex Fontenot and Ramon Jefferson, are those the top running backs?
Ramon Jefferson is not on campus yet, I don't think. So currently scholarship running backs available to CU's is Alex Fontenot, Deion Smith, and Jaylee Stacks.
Okay. Is Josiah Davis, he's gone.
I'm pretty sure he tore his ACL. He's just recovering.
Okay, whatever.
I might be wrong.
That sounds like okay. So from what I figure, that sounds like Alex Fonso's job to lose, unless Ramon Jefferson comes in, and I assume that they would split carries those two.
Ramon Jefferson will absolutely play. He will absolutely play. And Deion Smith also showed some good things, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the receivers, do we know which of the receivers will probably be the main targets? Or like,
so
am I hallucinating that Montana Lamonius Craig's good?
No, he's really good. He is not the leading receiver coming back. That's
Brady Russell.
Daniel Arias, actually. Brady Russell, as you know, is a tight end.
I'm sorry. Is he not a leading receiver?
All right, Dick. yes. So Montana Lamonius Craig is one of them. Daniel Arias is one of them. RJ Sneed, what,
like 206 receiving yards.
Yes, or I think it's even less. But yeah, and RJ Sneed is going to play a lot coming in from Baylor. So we better hope he's very good, or at least pretty good.
What's his player type again?
He's a possession heavy receiver, like mainly possession receiver.
Oh, what did I say? 236 yards?
Yeah.
You said 237.
There you go.
Okay. Can you tell me what a possession receiver is? Because I've never known. Is it just a receiver who's not that fast?
That's definitely part of it, but I would consider a possession receiver, because you can be fast and be a possession receiver. I think a prototype would be Larry Fitzgerald, where they are a gigantic catch radius and they're going to be able to run your intermediate routes, quick in and out of breaks, get open quick, you know, things like that. Tony Brown would be an example of possession receiver that CU had recently. So
who has possession in this scenario? The offense?
Yeah. Are you asking about the definition of the term possession receiver?
Yes, I don't know what it is.
Okay, I've never known what it is. I would consider the definition of possession receiver is someone who helps you maintain possession. So there are receivers that
like
will help
a chain
you
mover.
Yes, someone who moves okay. the chains. Yep.
Okay. Is that it?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Because it's always when I play NCAA football 14 or whatever, it's just the receivers that aren't that fast that are listed as possession receivers.
Yes. So well, that's how Madden likes to do. Anquan Boldin was the prototypical possession receiver.
Yes. I wasn't sure if that was like a yak thing or a move the chains thing. So that's nice to clear up. Okay, so RJ Snead.
Another huge transfer, he'll play right away.
Yeah.
Chase Penry will absolutely get a lot of run.
Okay.
On defense, I'm still terrified of inside linebacker with no Nate Landman. That is, I have no idea who's going to play there. Quinn Perry will obviously play a lot. Mr. Williams, who has a great name and was a freshman last year, according to the roster, is now 6 foot flat and 250 pounds. So I kind of want to see that. Marvin Ham, who I've liked since he committed under Mel Tucker, is going to play a lot there. But I am just nervous about what that looks like. I don't mm-hmm. – so that on defense scares me to death, as well as we are still T-minus eight, like a million years since Jimmy Gilbert left, and I do not know who the go-to pass rusher is going to be on the edge.
Okay, so we have Terrence Lang in his seventh season on campus.
But he's not on the edge. He's a defensive end.
He's a defensive end. Jalen Sami is the nose tackle.
Yeah.
And then who is on the edge? Is it Guy Thomas, Jamar Montgomery? Are they good?
So Guy Thomas is going to be outside linebacker. He might be the go-to edge rusher. We don't know.
Okay.
Who was the other name you mentioned?
Jamar Montgomery.
He's more of like a coverage inside. I mean, he can rush a passer, but that's not going to be his big thing. But yeah, he's going to be an outside linebacker thing there. Devin Grant is going to play from outside linebacker. He played last year.
Oh, yes. Okay.
He's pretty fun. Classic Texas guy.
What does that mean?
He played high level football for a long time. So he came in last year ready to go.
Okay.
It's what I'm taking it to mean. Alvin Williams has been inside and outside from Georgia.
I trust any player named Alvin.
I don't know, man. That is the scary part. I think the once again, the front defensive line is going to be okay. And once again, I'm actually kind of excited. We lost Christian Gonzalez and Mekhi Blackman, which is very bad. But the young talent there was pretty exciting last year, and I think it will continue to be so. So I like what I saw at Tyron Taylor. I want to see more of that. Kalen Moore was pretty exciting back there, and Nico Reed is just so fast. So I don't know. Also, I found a new starting quarterback. This is what we're going to end the podcast on.
Oh, shit. Okay. Is it Maddox Kopp?
No. It's another freshman, walk-on, from Valley Village, California, named Prez Juarez.
What?
Prez Juarez.
Is he on the roster?
Yeah.
What number?
It appears that he's unnumbered.
Great chance. Oh, I see him.
Yeah, he's unnumbered. Dude, come on. We have to.
Let's see. Okay. So this guy looks like he just finished rushing. Where is... Okay.
He's got to start. We are now a Prez Juarez podcast. Move over, Brendan Lewis.
Oh, he's from the Valley.
That's what I just said. He's from Valley Village.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. We have some good names.
Some decent names this year. Mr. Williams and Prez Juarez, two leaders.
Yeah, I can find more. If you stall, I'll find more.
Well, there's Zion Magalay on the outside, too.
What the?
I'm watching Prez Juarez's huddle.
We have a player named Mason Midget. Which is okay.
What a name, man.
Okay, is Trevor Woods gonna be good? I assume he's
I love Trevor Woods. He was good last year.
Yeah, I know, but
I've loved him since he signed.
I assume he's starting, right?
Yes, he's starting.
Okay. Oh, hey, Grant Page. I played basketball with him much.
Yes, signing day flip from Nebraska, Grant Page.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why. I really have no idea why. I thought he was going to Kenny Bell us, but I guess not. Gord Fairview to Nebraska. Sometimes I make these deep cuts, and I don't know if they're too deep of cuts. Like, you caught the Austin Dufault thing earlier, and I didn't know if that was going to be. Okay. Is it time to wrap up?
It's time to wrap up.
What does Justin Jackson do? Has he done anything?
He was fine last year. He's a rotation piece. He'll be a rotation piece again this year.
And Jeremiah Doss, does he do anything?
He was hurt last year.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, okay, great. Okay, great. Great stuff. Who is your favorite player to keep an eye on
the offense? Spring?
On the offense.
For spring football, I don't know. I'm excited to see a lot out of Eric Olson at tight end. He got mentioned in the first day, but him and Caleb Fourier are just different types of tight ends than we've had. Like, they are your freakish NFL guys, 6'5", run like a deer type guys. Mm-hmm. That's something we haven't seen a lot of at CU, and I want to see more of that. Mike Samford, if nothing else, he may not be good at scoring a lot of points as an offensive coordinator, but he will absolutely feature a tight end if he has one. So I want to see more of that.
Do we have a punter? What happened to our guy?
Yes, we do. So Josh Watts transferred out. Great punter last year. Ashton Logan coming in, a 5-star according to Chris Saylor Kicking Academy.
God, that's California. Such bullshit.
So he gray-shirted last year. He's now in as a gray-shirt freshman this year. That's right. We gray-shirted a punter. He was highly sought after, and CU picked him up. He is going to boom some guys. Cole Becker and Ashton Logan are the backbone of the hottest special teams unit in the Pac-12, baby.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was thinking more about
it's the Becker time.
And I thought, yeah, we're going to need a punter unless we have something going on. Any other defensive players to get excited about besides Trevor Woods?
To get excited about?
Yeah. Who are you most excited about?
I mean, Terrence Lang is a 6th-year senior, is also exciting, but he's been exciting since day one.
Yeah,
like I said, no, those young DBs.
More flashy.
Nico Reed is really cool. Kalen Moore is a really fun athlete. We can look at, I don't know, Jalen Stryker will play after being at junior college last year. I'm just nervous about the linebackers, so it's hard for me to look at any of those linebackers.
Yeah, maybe don't.
Okay, I won't. I don't know.
Yeah.
Young DBs, I think, are what you can be excited about.
I'm going to have my head in the sand and peek out if we're doing well.
Okay.
Peek out if things look nice, because last season kind of killed me.
It was very upsetting. Yep. We'll see if Carl Durrell survives this year. That is the big question. You like all the hires. Suoto left, unfortunately. So now we are left with, we'll see. All right. Okay. I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done. See you, Jack.
See ya.
Buzz. Buzz. Buzz.